In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, August 15th, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Today it is Industry Chatter, as we do every Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour. And the industry landscape has been very busy over the last several weeks, much more busy than people expect for this time, mid-August and late in the fiscal year. My guest to talk about all that is going on in the industry world is Guy Timberlake, the Chief Visionary Officer of the American Small Business Coalition. And Guy, my friend, it is always good to have you on the program. Thanks for being here today.
Francis, always great to be with you. Thank you.
Is it weird to you that there is as much going on as there is? We have the OASIS RFP coming out. NASA SUP 5 will drop any day now. We had the Homeland Security Department's big cyber acquisition just come out. That's an awful lot of money floating around, at least in the early stages, for this time of the year, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's money kind of in the context of, you know, the OASIS and SUP being the vehicles. So there's, you know, nothing being obligated to those right now. It's simply the hunting license, the contract vehicle. The DHS, you know, on the other hand, yeah, that's money, you know, in hand, as it were. And so those are good opportunities, and you know, we're looking forward to seeing a lot of activity there. But I think, you know, that's a lot of activity from that award standpoint. I think what a lot of folks are still waiting for are those hard dollar requirements that the fiscal year end is usually known for.
That's another issue that I wanted to talk about with you, Guy, because I see and hear that the kind of the curve that we see toward the end of the fiscal year is pushed back about 6 weeks. And people are saying they're starting to see the kind of activity now than the last 2 weeks or so that they normally see about mid-September, and wondering what that means for the rest of the fiscal year.
Well, I mean, and depending on who you talk to, there's a lot of, you know, mixed bag of answers there. You know, talking to some folks in government or industry, you know, it's more the doomsayer approach. It'll never happen. I mean, basically, the government has gotten to a point where, because of all the factors that we're all familiar with, sequestration, budget constraints, you know, the furloughs obviously kicking in, and then just the general bandwidth issues that agencies are faced with, nobody that I'm talking to right now, generally speaking, is very confident that we're going to see, you know, the big plus up that's usually associated with this time of year. You know, what may come of it, you know, if anything or if substantial, is probably already predetermined, in the sense that agencies are going to use the absolute easiest mechanism they can, which will be, you know, awards against existing contract vehicles or existing contracts. And those companies, you know, that'll probably end up getting these or be in the hunt already know about these opportunities. You know, it's not been preordained that they're going to get them, but they're already there from a market research, relationship development type of opportunity.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that there is such apprehension about what's going to happen between now and September 30?
Well, I think it's a unique situation for a lot of folks. I mean, it certainly is for me, and I haven't been around since the you know, mid-late 80s. You know, have not really seen this. You know, the S word is something new, you know, for me, and I'm sure for a lot of people too. So it's a unique situation that we've really never had to deal with, and I don't think we've really, you know, we've seen tough times before, but, you know, the insular nature of the government contracting industry is, you know, tough times for us, you know, were, you know, nothing in comparison to what the private sector would see. You know, we're now seeing, you know, a lot of what the private sector has seen over the years, which caused a lot of companies to come into the government sector. Now we're seeing some of the opposite, companies ducking out of the government sector.
And that dynamic, I'm not sure I figure out, because the bottom line is, yes, sequestration is unpleasant, and yes, it's hard to predict, and on and on and on. But the bottom line is, even if the sequester number sticks for fiscal 2014, Guy, the Defense Department is still going to spend $470-some billion next year. It's still a lot of money there. It's certainly less than before, and it makes the going more tough. I'm not trying to understate that. But, you know, it's not like they're going from $500 billion to $100 billion.
Well, know. But, you know, when you look at where the things are right now, and, you know, I've not done the month-to-month track on spending comparing this year to last fiscal year, you know, I think it's not too far off other than the numbers being lower. But, you know, as it sits right now, I mean, fiscal year 2012 on the books, you know, the number that you report in Federal Procurement Data System, the government shows $517 billion being awarded on the year. So, you know, walking away, big chunk of money, which was less than previous year, but still a lot of money. We're not even at $300 billion in spending this year yet.
Well, but we've got to get that squeezed in sometime between now and September 30, because you know how the game is played. If they don't spend it by then, they're not going to get it next time around.
Well, and that's exactly right, and which brings up some of the things that, you know, we've been hearing from different folks, again, government and industry. I've actually heard a couple different times folks at agencies talk about, you know, they're going to do the right thing, do the responsible thing. Instead of just pushing the money out to spend, they're going to just send it back to the Treasury. And, you know, I know other folks who are saying, you know, blasphemy, are you kidding me? You know, that means you're going to take a hit next year in your budget, you know, budget request. So there's, you know, again, there's this difference of opinion on what is the right thing to do. But again, you know, the big thing is we're now, you know, 6 weeks out for the end of the fiscal year. And for the government to go through, let's say, some of the more normal processes of developing requirements, competing those requirements, getting them awarded, there's just not enough time, you know, generally speaking, for them to get it done. So so whatever does come out is going to be expedited, whether it's, again, making the awards to existing vehicles, simplified acquisitions procedures, you know, all the above. That's probably how it's going to happen.
Now, I know you're a small business guru in particular, but this question's geared not just for folks who are running small businesses, but just business in general. What does that mean, then, for the types of things that we'll expect to see over the next 6 weeks? And, I mean, you've talked about what you think it means for the way that those things will be acquired by the agencies.
Right.
But, I mean, from the sound of it, it doesn't sound like agencies are going to be able to try to do anything complex before the end of the fiscal year if they're not going to have time to require developments and do a full RFP, blah, 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 blah.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. I mean, looking at the way the government typically does business, you know, and this is definitely not typical. You know, the typical process for, again, getting something developed, you know, whether the customer sends it over to contracting does their thing, you know, vets the package, makes a determination of how they're going to acquire it, you know, that, you know, they start doing that right now. We're to the end of the fiscal year before they actually get to go out for competition, quite honestly, or get responses back. So, you know, what we're looking at right now, I think, really is, again, it's going to be an extreme measure. So it's going to be agencies using those acquisition techniques that allow them to, you know, speed up the process to get these buys done, because there is that, you know, they got to support their customer, the mission's got to get done, business operations must continue, so they've got to get those done. But again, I think just, you know, whatever date it was last calendar year when $517 billion was realized, you know, let's say we're only going to get to $450 billion this year, you know, taking into account, you know, sequestration, you know, losses, things of that nature. We still have $180 billion to spend between now and September 30th.
All right. So in the scenario that you're painting there, who wins? My initial reaction would be the winners will be the people who are on the GWACs, the very easy-to-use vehicles. Do I have that right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And so this brings in kind of another, you know, dynamic. And you and I have talked about this before. You know, back in the days, you know, the old days, I referred to them, you know, before CCR, before Fed BizOps, when everything was done on paper, you know, in conversation, you know, the bulk of the money the government spent, you know, as far as what we were always told and trained to understand to be true, you know, most of the money went to a contract vehicle of some type. GSA schedule, you know, GWACs were brand new back then, IDIQ contracts, BOAs, those type of things. If your company wasn't positioned with a contract vehicle of some type, you were effectively dead in the water. You were relegated to being a subcontractor. And again, that was the gospel according to federal contracting that most of us, you know, operated under. So when I look at spending right now on where this fiscal year is, and, you know, I see $277 billion reported, you know, in FPDSNG, and then look at those orders that have been issued against established contract vehicles, such as blanket purchase agreements, IDIQs, GUX, and so forth, and realize that that spending is at $127 billion, which means that spending that's done on open market vehicles or open market contracts and standalone contracts is actually leading by $17 billion for the year. So for whatever reason, the government has opted to do things different than what you would think they would do on paper from an ease of acquisition standpoint. So going into the end of the fiscal year, that probably would reverse. I don't think they would have the time to process those unless they're going to do a bunch of simplified acquisitions using definitive contracts and purchase orders, you know, which gives them that ability to do very fast turnarounds.
All right. I have one thought about how you, the people that you work with, the small business cohort, might be winners in that scenario, and we'll talk about it when we come back on Industry Chatter. Guy Timberlake, Chief Visionary Officer at the American Small Business Coalition, is my guest, and we're back in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Miss Game Day the Navy Way this fall in Annapolis. Order your 2013 Navy football season tickets today and secure your reserve seat for the Navy versus Air Force game on Saturday, October 5th. Tickets are going fast. Get the best seats now by calling 1-800-US-4-NAVY or by visiting NavySports.com. That's 1-800-US-4-NAVY or NavySports.com to get yours today. Navy football, Game Day, the Navy Way.
Today, federal agencies are awash in a sea of data. You have two choices, drift along or harness it. Turn to Deloitte. We help you reveal insights buried deep in your data. With our private sector insights and public sector experience, we'll help you make sense of the what-ifs and what's coming, so you can reduce costs and improve outcomes. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Has sequestration and budget cuts made performing vital IT functions difficult for your agency? If so, it's time to explore another option with SUSE Linux, the open source leader. Save time and money by lowering the cost of your operating system and associated products with SUSE's expanded support program. It's the fastest way to save money on your next Linux renewal and lower the cost of licensing without changing any of your applications or systems. Learn more at SUSE.com/spendless. That's SUSE.com/spendless. Or purchase on SOUP through CDWG.
Smarter mobile government starts with real innovation. The Lenovo ThinkPad Helix Convertible Ultrabook, inspired by Intel, combines lightweight tablet mobility and Ultrabook performance powered by the Intel Core i7 processor. Durable rip-and-flip design switches from Ultrabook to tablet with the push of a button. Two powerful devices in one, protected by legendary Think reliability and robust government-grade security. Go further. Do more with Lenovo. More at WTOP.com/Ultrabook.
The Cybersecurity Report is brought to you by University of Maryland University College.
Researchers at the mobile security firm Lookout say they discovered a security flaw in Google Glass, which allowed them to capture data without the user's knowledge when the user simply took a photo that captured a malicious QR code. Lookout says they were able to force Google Glass to silently connect to a Wi-Fi access point, and they were able to view all the data flowing to and from the device. I'm J.J. Green.
Secure your future with a bachelor's or master's degree in cybersecurity, available entirely online from University of Maryland University College. Their programs have been specially developed by experts from government and private industry, so you'll get the real-world skills you need for your career. Plus, UMUC is designated as a National Center of Academic Excellence in Information Assurance Education by NSA and DHS. University of Maryland University College. Call 800-888-UMUC or visit umuc.edu/cybersecurity.
The last furlough Friday for many civilian employees of the Defense Department might be upon us. I'm Emily Kopp. On Friday's Federal Drive, we'll hear from some of those feds who are spending their forced days off in pretty inventive ways. Warren Schaefer joins us from Fredericksburg, Virginia, and Eric Lackey calls in from Germany. It starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Guy Timberlake, the Chief Visionary Officer of the American Small Business Coalition. And Guy, we were talking about winners and losers in the last part of our conversation as we get down to the end of the fiscal year and the kind of weird end of the fiscal year that is turning out to be. And as you talked about the good old days a couple of minutes ago and the way we used to do business, it occurred to me that maybe one of the winners this year, potentially, will be the small business people you do business with, because you were talking about before the days before FedBizOps and everything was done on paper and that kind of thing. It got me to thinking there's more information now than ever before in history in general, but also in the space that we live in, which is doing business with the federal government. You can learn more and know more and see more from your desk than you've ever been able to before, let alone get up and get out of the office and go to events and network and all those kinds of things. So you can be plugged in more places than ever before and have a chance to do business like you've never done before. Is that fair to say, do you think?
Oh, there's no question. And, you know, just to kind of, you know, throw this in there so all my BD friends don't get annoyed with the commentary, you know, the online stuff, the stuff that you can do at your desk is always meant to be an augmentation. It's always meant to supplement, you know, the real-time, in-person, you know, networking, business development relationship you're creating that way. But you're dead on. I mean, the information that's available out there, you can get to a certain point of understanding and insight about an organization or an opportunity, and then with the right business development, you know, tactics and relationships, you can really firm up, you know, an understanding to make very good decisions about, you know, bid, no bid, go, no go, all those types of things. And so, you know, when it comes down to it, and, you know, I was reading an article earlier today, came from somebody else in the industry who I have a lot of respect for, and his opinion, and, you know, he is still talking about, you know, there's going to be this hit. There's going to be probably 35% of the overall spend this year is going to happen between now and the end of the fiscal year. And I hope he's right. But again, based on some of the things that I'm hearing right now, as far as, let's say that does happen, small businesses will probably see some benefit just from the reaction time, that nimbleness, agility that we have. But where it may be hurtful is those companies, again, based on what I'm hearing right now, that are not positioned with the right contract vehicles or any contract vehicles may end up losing out this time. And again, what I'd love to see happen is, you know, agencies, as they've been doing all year, really take advantage of simplified acquisition procedures, do those purchase orders which don't require an existing contract vehicle, and then small businesses will rock.
I think what you say is right on, and I didn't mean to suggest that it's a good business strategy to sit at your desk, collect data, and think that's going to be an effective way to build your business. But certainly you can learn more before you do go out and beat the street than you ever could in the past. You know, when mm-hmm. when you were doing that you really had to do everything just by pounding the pavement.
Exactly.
And now you at least can gain some business intelligence before you go out there. And when you're talking to people, you can have some semblance of understanding what's going on already. And that just wasn't possible in the past.
Well, it was definitely not possible. And if it was possible, again, it was still a matter of a phone call or a handshake. And to your point, you're dead on. I mean, there are things you can do to pre-qualify how you're going to approach or not approach someone, whether it's another company or an agency. And, you know, one of the things that we talk to companies about quite a bit is, you know, become an FBI profiler. You know, use that, you know, criminal minds mentality to really go out and, you know, understand who somebody is to the best of your ability. So if you look at an organization and, you know, you say, okay, well, look, I want to go sell to them. Well, okay, why? You know, are they buying what you sell? How do they buy it? How do they compete it? You know, how are they making the awards? And all of these factors will help you get to a good decision. And it's not so much how are they buying it set aside, you know, are they doing a small business set aside? You know, again, you know, back to the old days, I didn't care. I worked for a small business. We didn't go looking for small business set asides. We were looking for business. And that's one of the other things, you know, that I wanted to throw in there as well, just from the standpoint of how agencies are making awards right now. You know, a lot of companies, you know, kind of why I brought up the point about not doing all the work at your desk, it wasn't so much that you said it or insinuated that. I think a lot of companies might take that to heart and say, okay, great, I'm going to sit at my desk and pound this out, and that's all I need to do.
Hey, we have about a minute left before we have to take a break, so let me jump in there. But you kind of led me to something I wanted to ask you about anyway, and that is the concept that you've talked about before about ethical stalking. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great name for it. It's catchy, but it also crystallizes what you're talking about. Let's talk about that when we come back. My guest is Guy Timberlake. He is Chief Visionary Officer of the American Small Business Coalition, and we'll continue our conversation on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
At VAE Systems, protecting troops is always a top priority. That's why we create combat vehicles that not only help them win the fight, but bring them back home. Our vehicles are designed from the ground up with the latest integrated solutions, all with troops in mind. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day, so we'll be there on the next front. That's VAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at vaesystems.com/nextfront.
Life is filled with uncertainty, military life especially. AFMA can help you breathe easy through it all. Since 1879, AFMA has helped military families with low-cost military life insurance and the best survivor assistance. We're experts at helping you manage the complexities of military life and securing your family's financial well-being. Call 1-877-398-2263 today or go to AAFMAA.com to see how we can help you.
Today's Human Capital Management Report brought to you by the Graduate School.
The Defense Department has reduced the total number of furlough days its employees will face from 11 to 6. Most civilians at the agency will take their final furlough day this week. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel said the agency was able to cut the number of furlough days after finding an additional $1.5 billion in savings. Defense officials have said another round of furloughs or reductions in force are possible in 2014 if sequestration remains in effect.
Doing more with less, smaller budget, fewer people. Training is the solution. And Graduate School USA is ranked the most affordable and overall best choice for federal training. They offer hundreds of top quality courses, including customized programs that can be taught right at your location online or in their classrooms conveniently located near the L'Enfant Metro. Get more out of your training budget. Visit graduateschool.edu. That's graduateschool.edu.
Please join Max Kakis, host of AFCEA Answers, on Friday, August 16th at 2.05 p.m., where he'll be joined by a panel of government and industry professionals to discuss enterprise services. The panel will include David DeVries, Deputy Chief Information Officer for Information Enterprise at the Department of Defense. Don't miss AFCEA Answers with Max Kakis on Friday, August 16th at 2.05 p.m., right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by AFCEA International and brought to you by CenturyLink.
How Kids Live, from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, some kids seem to do what they should for health, and some seem to do the opposite. The trends were seen in survey data from 39 states on almost 10,000 kids ages 11 to 16. At the National Institutes of Health, Ronald Iannotti says about a quarter were above average in physical activity and eating fruits and vegetables, and below average in being sedentary and snacking. About another quarter were like the mirror image.
They're low in physical activity, high in sedentary behavior, high in snack consumption, and not eating a lot of fruits and vegetables.
A third group was the largest, about half, and it also did less than what it should. The study in the Journal of Adolescent Health was supported by the NIH and HHS's Health Resources and Services Administration. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Government IT professionals, register today for the Executive Leadership Conference. This government-led education and training event hosted by the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council features newly designed interactive workshops. Nationally prominent speakers from within government will share their freshest ideas and techniques for leveraging new technologies and data for mission success. October 27th through 29th in Williamsburg, Virginia. Register today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org.
WFED Washington, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Now your Federal News Radio cybersecurity update brought to you by CenturyLink mornings at 30 minutes past the hour. Agencies worried about smartphone cybersecurity have new advice on how to button them up. The Office of Management and Budget released a 104-page instruction manual with detailed guidelines for government-owned phones and tablets. The Mobile Security Reference Architecture offers a range of options depending on how and where the mobile device is used. The manual came out on the one-year anniversary of the White House Strategy for Digital Government. Guidelines were developed by people from the Homeland Security and Defense Departments and the National Institute of Standards and Technology. We've got a link to the guidelines at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive. Tune in for your cybersecurity update brought to you by CenturyLink mornings at 30 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Guy Timberlake, my guest on Industry Chatter today, as we talk about the landscape leading up to the end of the fiscal year, not just for small businesses, although he is Chief Visionary Officer of the American Small Business Coalition, but for everybody that's doing business with the federal government. And Guy, we talked before the break about the concept, as you call it, ethical stalking. And it sounds like, on the one hand, it's kind of old school. It's the stuff that the people in sales have always done. And it actually kind of made me think, as you were talking in the last segment, a lot of what you were talking about sounded just like good old fashioned prospecting, except you did it before you approached the customer instead of by asking the customer questions. But on the other hand, your concept of ethical stalking is a little bit more complicated than that, and is also kind of a new thing combined with the old. So give me the lowdown on what that really means.
Well, absolutely, and you know, you're right. It is old and new. I mean, it's the type of thing that anyone in government contracting who's got a forward-facing, you know, role in the company, that's got a, you know, sales, marketing, business development, or executive role in the company, needs to be doing, because at the heart of it, it's really about finding information that can be used to make decisions, and then using that information and making decisions in a way that are more efficient for companies. And, you know, efficiency, you know, hopefully translates into profitability, you know, along with success. And so it really is a matter of, you know, getting access to the multitudes of information sources that are out there. And again, going back to, you know, the vernacular of the old days, you know, versus now, we didn't have, you know, FedBizOps or SAM or, you know, FPDS available. FPS existed. It just wasn't on the web because the web wasn't there yet. And so the access that you have now to be able to go in and pull information up on a company or an agency, look at spending by a department or spending by a specific contracting office, is very, very useful information. And there are lots and lots of organizations that capture this information, and they present it, and they resell it. And that's great because people need to use it. But at the same time, the root of a lot of that information is a free public source, you know, and that's the Federal Procurement Data System, along with other sources that are hosted by the government.
When you were talking about knowing your customer and understanding what you're going to sell them and what they're buying, that really resonated with me, Guy, because – and it reminded me actually of the social media debate that agencies had like 3 to 5 years ago, where when Facebook really first became popular, and then the same thing with Twitter, and they would say, hey, we're going to get a Facebook account, and I would ask them, well, what are you going to put on there? Who do you want to communicate with? Well, we're going to get on there because that's where the people are. Well, what do you – that's not the point. The point is, what? How do you serve the person that you're communicating with? And that's exactly the same thing as you're talking about here. It's one thing for me to want to sell you something, and it's another thing for me to want to serve you. But of course, money is going to change hands, and that's the way that it should be. One of my favorite references in financial management, personal financial management books, is the reference that dollar bills are certificates of appreciation for a job well done. And so there's nothing wrong with you making money off of selling the government something when you're serving them. But I think that gets forgotten, and somebody says, well, I'm this, and so that's what I'm going to sell. Well, maybe nobody wants that.
Well, and that's exactly right. And that is, you know, the square peg round hole approach.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, you know, I'm going to build it and they're going to come.
Yep.
And, well, Not so much in the government. I mean, they're pretty much not only set in their ways, they've got specific criteria, specific, you know, needs and missions to fulfill. And what you do, no matter who you are, what size business, you may not be relevant, is really what it comes down to. So I think part of that is, you know, we hear a lot from folks in government and even in industry about companies approaching them, not just small ones, mid-tiers, large companies too, and assuming that they're a good fit for that agency because they read the website, they do healthcare, so I'm going to come offer this healthcare solution, come buy it. And without any doing any of the real due diligence to understand that, well, you're thinking of MedCom, you know, NDOD versus, you know, FDA or HHS or something like that. And so it really is about that, you know, technical, cultural relevance, you know, for these types of goods and services.
When we go back to what I was talking about earlier about prospecting and that kind of thing, you know, it seems to me that there's really you have a tremendous advantage now, and there is no excuse for not taking advantage of that advantage, leveraging that. Mm-hmm. And that is you can find all of those things, as you just described them. You can learn all of that stuff using the tools we've already discussed before you ever go in and see the customer, before you run into somebody at a cattle call after an event or any of that. You can know it cold if you put some effort into it. And knowing what you're doing compared to not being sure or not knowing what you're doing can turn a disaster into a tremendous opportunity.
Well, and it's a funny thing because, you know, whenever we go down this line of, you know, of conversation, I always refer back to Jason Miller and an article he wrote, you know, for another organization years ago. That was a series of interviews he did with, you know, Govies, you know, current and retired, who talked about the angst of taking meetings with industry.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the good and bad experiences that occurred. But, you know, the number one overwhelming thing that really came from that and from what I've seen also are folks that go in and don't do any due diligence and just, okay, what do you got for me? You know, they want the customer to sell for them, you know, as opposed to going in and taking the time and kind of really evaluating why you're relevant, why you're not relevant. And so I think that's a big part of it. And now, especially with the onset of, you know, all the additional transparencies and the web and all the free and fee-based services out there that can give you information, there's almost no reason, unless you're going for very specific information that may not be publicly available, for you to be able to do at least a preliminary profile of a program or an organization and understand where you may or may not fit. And so it comes down to this day and age where, you know, the government is not doing as many conferences, their own or attending them. And so those touch opportunities that companies had years ago are going away. And so if you get FaceTime with someone that matters in government, you want to make the best of it. So don't go in there and say, okay, well, tell me about what you do and how do I sell to you? It's not that. You go in from an empowerment position and with everything you can possibly know about them and say, look, I understand what some of your challenges were on this old program or this other requirement. Here's why we think we can help. This is the kind of thing we've done for other customers before. And it's not about saying, you know, Army versus Navy or that kind of thing, but in another organization that has the same basic mission as yours, we were able to solve this problem for them.
Yeah, it's a legwork issue and a homework issue, and I have to tell you, I talk to people in government all the time, not just in technology, it's all across the landscape, and I continue to be amazed at the stories that I hear about people coming to these meetings with very busy government officials who could meet with a lot of different people, and these folks walk into these meetings and they're not ready, Guy.
Well, and that's being unprepared, number one, you know, that causes the number one casualty.
But that, yes, that's exactly right. And that, it's the old, you don't get a second chance to make a first impression.
Exactly right. And I think that's, you know, what it comes down to. It's not only that, but it's also, again, doing your due diligence to find out who should you talk to? You know, everyone is attracted to the CIO, you know, or the Chief Acquisition Officer, and they're great people. You know, and, you know, I know some of them and lots of other people do too, but are they your customer? And in a lot of cases, they're not. You know, they're the policymaker. They may have some program-related responsibility, but, you know, what it comes down to is understanding who's got need, budget, and authority. And usually it's not the person way up there. It's somebody in their office or a couple levels down from them that's actually got that responsibility.
All right. So I think we've shaken people by the lapels and, and gotten them to understand that when they get that FaceTime, when they make that next step, they really need to be prepared for it. What I wonder, and we kind of danced around it a little bit in the first part of this conversation, but I want to dig into it a little bit more when we come back from the break, is we can read all the information that's out there that we want, and we can know all the stuff that's going on. But if that stuff just soaks into our brains and we don't toss it around a little bit and analyze it and think about it and bounce it off our colleagues and so on, it doesn't do any good. And so let's talk about that when we come back. Guy Timberlake is on Industry Chatter today. He is the president and chief visionary officer of the American Small Business Coalition, and we'll continue our conversation in just a minute.
How kids live. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, some kids seem to do what they should for health, and some seem to do the opposite. The trends were seen in survey data from 39 states on almost 10,000 kids ages 11 to 16. At the National Institutes of Health, Ronald Iannotti says about a quarter were above average in physical activity and eating fruits and vegetables, and below average in being sedentary and snacking. About another quarter were like the mirror image.
They're low in physical activity, high in sedentary behavior, high in snack consumption, and not eating a lot of fruits and vegetables.
A third group was the largest, about half, and it also did less than what it should. The study in the Journal of Adolescent Health was supported by the NIH and HHS's Health Resources and Services Administration. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Steve Richardson saved the life of a kidnapped 5-year-old boy. William Borucki helped discover Earth-like planets 1,200 light-years away. And Dave Brumel has been called the Steve Jobs of the Social Security Administration. These individuals are among the 31 federal employees named finalists for this year's Service to America medals. The awards honor feds advancing the health, safety, and well-being of Americans. Hear interviews with each of the nominees and learn more about their work at federalnewsradio.com. Search Service to America.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Beth McGrath, Deputy Chief Management Officer at the Defense Department.
The department has had a multi-pronged approach to achieving audibility both for 14 and 17. Each of the components, both the military department and defense agencies, bring forward their financial improvement audit readiness plans. Mr. Hale and I track progress against the plans. We're really working this every day.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Now your Federal News Radio DoD report brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour. A new joint professional military education course is underway at the Defense Department. DoD will start its third class in September and will have 18 students of equal air, land, and sea experience. DoD expects about 80 students to graduate the class at the Joint Special Operations University in Tampa, Florida by the end of this year. You get your DoD report brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Industry Chatter today with Guy Timberlake. And Guy, as we've been talking about all of the business intelligence opportunities that people have and the ways that they can use information, I mentioned before that it strikes me that we can read all we want and we can figure out what a customer wants all we want, but taking the information in isn't enough. We have to analyze it in a particular way. And I wanted to tie that with something that you talked about earlier. And we get in modes sometimes in all walks of life, and contracting in the government's no exception. And there's a stat that you turned me on to about small business contracting that I think is really important to lay out, and it's something that people should process as they're processing all the other kinds of things that we talked about.
Well, absolutely. It's something we talk about quite a bit in, you know, our various working groups. You know, I incorporate it into reports that we make available for companies to use as part of their, you know, determination of pursuing or not pursuing a certain organization or agency. But you know, one of the things that gets me a lot is, you know, and it's not, in defense of the government per se. They kind of made their bed with regard to the set-aside programs. They're the ones that are setting the goals and so forth. But my issue is with the companies who get fixated on that 23%. And there are companies that, get started up or somewhere along the way only pursue set-aside opportunities. And I'm not sure why. I think it's just because there are some folks who just believe that's what they're supposed to do. They are a small business in a certain category, whether it's small business, veteran-owned, woman-owned, whatever it is. So they only look at those opportunities that are, kind of targeted towards them. And the issue is that represents, a very specific finite number of opportunities, and companies take themselves out of the game, out of the hunt, as it were, by not looking at other opportunities. And so the number we were looking at earlier is, when I look at, what the government indicates they have set aside this fiscal year, year to date, is $26.3 billion. And that is, across 14, 15 different socioeconomic groups, emerging small business, HBCU, or, hub zone, all the above. But then when I go look at, what they call the COBS, the contracting officer business size selection, where they basically make a yes or no determination, was the company that received the award a small business or not, that number goes from $26.3 billion to $49.6 billion. So what it shows me is that companies, small businesses are going out there, and they're not, or at least a good chunk of them are not fixed on only looking at set-aside business. They're going and competing on full and open opportunities, and they're winning, because they've doubled down the set-aside number.
That's really incredible that there's twice as much money going to small businesses in the end as the government setting aside. So it's really hard to look at that number and say there isn't an opportunity for small businesses to work for the government.
Well, and I think what it is, again, we look at the program, we look at, that it's supposed to level the playing field and so forth, and I don't disagree that the program is needed, but I think that there are some folks in government and a lot of folks in industry who get fixated on that, and it's let's set it aside, regardless of whether it's necessarily good for government or not. And so those companies, I've worked with a number of companies over the years, some of our members who were primes on contracts like DHS Eagle and so forth, I mean, they were awarded the small business portion of the contract. But one of the beautiful things about Eagle, for example, was companies, small businesses could compete if they chose on the full and open side against the big guys. And one of our companies, a company that has since been acquired because of their success, Kadix Systems, went into full and open territory and kicked the snot out of a lot of big companies and won most of their business on DHS Eagle and not the small business side. Hence, they were actually acquired by one of the Eagle primes.
Yeah, that's not a bad success story, my friend.
Not a bit.
That's the kind of thing that small business owners dream of happening. And what I hear over and over again, not just from the vendors who are doing it, but from the industry people or from the agency people that are working with them is, in the way things are working now, with agile development more important, mm-hmm. With budgets, overhead, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
They look at small businesses that are effective and that And they don't say market themselves well, but that's what matters. That's what's
right.
Important. They look at small business as a terrific alternative to the big boys because of all of the things that you're talking about. They know that there are things going on there that these companies can move quick and they can do things in time frames and margin points. Try saying that three times fast that the bigger companies can't always do.
Well, and one of the things, I mean, we hear a number of reasons over the years why government wants to work more with small business. Has nothing to do with the political reasons. That's not important to me. And, generally speaking, for those companies out there that are here to serve the greater good of doing a good job for the government, there's a capital interest there because we're all business owners, but we want to do a good job. And so we've heard from folks and senior leadership positions at you name the agency about, one of their, areas of angst being that when they call a large company because they need to escalate something, it takes them a day or two to get a call back from someone that can make a decision. Whereas that small business or even some of the mid-tier companies, they got the owner on speed dial. They've got their cell phone number. You know, if they're out hanging with their kids on the weekend, they know if they see that number come across, they're going to pick up the phone because it's important to them. And it's not that large companies don't care. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the bureaucracy, you know, and this, you know, the process of working with them for some folks in government has, you know, ended up being something that works against them.
Well, it's a big there's a big difference, Guy, between being one of a thousand customers that the CEO of a company oversees and being one of 10.
No question. And that, you know, that's a big thing because there's that, you know, attention to detail, that level of relationship, level of rapport that's established. You know, and again, I mean, the big thing is, and there are lots of things I can say about, you know, the, you know, what folks think about large companies and their motives for doing things and, you know, the difference between what small companies do. The bottom line is, you know, I think everyone's here to do business. And, you know, whether it's, you know, the debate continues on whether small businesses can effectively price something in a way, you know, or does it actually cost the government more to work with small businesses? You know, and I, you know, keep seeing information go back and forth on that. I think the government ultimately needs to make that decision on what's going to work for them using their tactics that they use to make the acquisitions. But I think, you know, I think the expectation is, yeah, we may not see a small business get an award for a Joint Strike Fighter program next week. But, you know, an innovative consortium of small and mid-tier companies could go displace a company on that that's got the right approach, right management process in place, and, you know, the right way to, you know, solve the customer's problems.
And then that becomes the stepping stone to move up to that level at some point in the future. I mean, it's a classic story. Guy Timberlake is the chief visionary officer of the American Small Business Coalition, and we'll wrap up our conversation on Industry Chatter today in just a second on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Okay, this is a fashion first and definitely fashion forward. Imagine beautiful models strutting down the runway in these stunning outfits made entirely of chocolate. It's the one and only Charity in Chocolate, happening on Friday, September 6th at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel in Washington, D.C. Experience incredible sweet and savory delights from 50 of the area's top chefs. Enjoy demonstrations and feast your eyes on this one-of-a-kind chocolate fashion show. Chefs have designed this culinary couture just for the special event, and it's all for a sweet cause. Proceeds benefit kids in the D.C. metro area through the Heart of America Foundation's Books from the Heart program. That's Charity in Chocolate, Friday, September 6th. It's one hot evening. So get your tickets before they melt away. Go to charityinchocolate.org. That's charityinchocolate.org. Charity in Chocolate, sponsored in part by Target.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Profile America, Thursday, August 15th. Chairs have a history going back to the ancient Egyptian pharaohs or even earlier in antiquity, but a couple of variants that no one was anxious to try out debuted this month in the 19th century. In 1890, the electric chair was used for the first time in Auburn, New York, to carry out a death sentence. Scarcely more alluring, a special dental chair was patented on this date in 1848 by Waldo Hanchett. His innovation was a wooden recliner with an extending headrest and a tray-like footrest so patients could open wide in somewhat greater comfort. Most furniture isn't so specialized, and American manufacturers of chairs, tables, beds, and all other household furniture and related products ship over $85 billion worth of goods annually. You can find more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Signs, so subtle we may not notice them.
Signs like loss of interest in activities. Signs like insomnia, fatigue, or withdrawing from friends.
Hey, Jeremy, come play cards with us.
Even talking about wanting to die. These are signs of depression.
Hi, my name is Smitty. My husband, Congressman Jerry Connolly, and I urge you to take signs of depression seriously. Let your loved one know you care, then seek help from a doctor or mental health professional.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why isn't 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Just a couple more minutes with Guy Timberlake, Chief Visionary Officer at the American Small Business Coalition. We've been talking a lot this hour, Guy, about the landscape of contracting, not just for small businesses, but for everybody who's trying to get in to the government and, or do some work, more work with the federal government. I would say let's crystallize all of what we've talked about and tell me what you expect to see in the minute or so that we have left in the next, let's stretch it out to like 18 months to give us a chance to get through the rest of this fiscal year and into 14.
Well, you know, I think, you know, one of the big things is, you know, we want to survive the end of this year first and hopefully, you know, get some movement, you know, where the agencies were able to go out and do some of the acquisitions that help kind of raise the numbers just a bit. And not for the sake of raising numbers, because I just be hard to imagine the government doing operations on close to half of what it spent the previous fiscal year. So I think that's one of the things we're immediately looking forward to is getting some more business that way. But you know, down the road, you know, I mean, I don't know, and I don't have the foresight to understand what, you know, the impact of sequestration is going to be in the coming new year, you know, the CR, things of that nature. I know it's going to be probably tight for a lot of companies. One of the things that we're concerned about are the companies having that survivability right now in these lean times, which has an impact on government and industry, because if the industrial base isn't there, then, you know, government's got to find a new way to get things done. So I think the long term right now is going to be really kind of watching the tea leaves, understanding what's going on, you know, with the agencies on the Hill, you know, tracking that aspect of it, and really being focused on your efforts to, you know, use, you know, market research, you know, find information, use that information, and be smart about it and do your due diligence across the board.
Guy, it's always great to have you on the program. I appreciate it very much, and best of luck. We'll look to you to help us understand what happens, help us read those tea leaves, my friend.
Absolutely. Francis, thanks very much.
Guy Timberlake of the American Small Business Coalition on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My conversation with Guy will be archived later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and more In-Depth with Francis Rose coming right around the corner on Federal News Radio.